Falafel, falafel, I would like a waffle. Waffle, waffle, I'd like a falafel. This is the best nonsense I've ever come up with on the spot. I'm kind of sold. Thank you. You are my creative inspiration.
I'm only sad I wasn't recording the falafel. Waffle.
Oh,
waffle.
I was recording falafel, falafel. I would like a waffle.
So I was not recording falafel, falafel. I would like a waffle.
Shit. If Cookie like had.
Only I had guess. Something.
For dropping the ball there.
That's okay. It can still be an episode title.
Falafel, falafel. I would like a waffle.
So huzzah. It's episode 143. Excuse me. A fancy ramen.
So close to 150.
Yale,
which is an arbitrary number, but I'm probably going to say that for the next 7 episodes.
Oh shit. I just looked at the docket. You also have started playing something that I would like to talk about. It's really the only thing I want to talk about.
It's the only thing I want to talk about. So Cookie should do the honors and tell us how his week went first.
Lots of singing, partying. I got sick. And I decided to play Katana Zero.
When you say partying, real quick, are you talking about drugs and sex and karaoke?
Oh, I was about to say rock and roll for part 3.
No sex, lots of cold medicine.
That's drugs.
Disco? Any disco in there?
Yeah. Yeah, there was quite a bit of karaokeing, singing involved as well.
I'll explain why I asked you that crude question later this podcast.
Are you a cop?
Because if you are, you got to tell me.
Are you a superstar cop?
Or just a sad cop? But are you a sorry cop? Yeah.
I was going to say, but last week was Christmas, as everyone should know. And I got a giant Gundam model that I'm really excited to build.
Which one?
It's the perfect grade unicorn Gundam with the LED kit.
Dude, fuck yeah. Unicorn's by far like my favorite Gundam at this point.
If you it's know? A unicorn robot, wouldn't it be a Zoid?
Unfortunately not. Not this time.
Really aiming for the deep cut there.
I was actually looking at some different Gundam models and I was thinking, this is not a Gundam. This is really just a Zoid. But besides that, one of my friends told me he wanted me to build a Barbatos Lupus Rex for him, and I had never seen Iron-Blooded Orphans, so...
That one's got a tail.
It does have a tail.
That one's practically a Zoid.
It is.
That one is a Zoid, yeah.
I'm excited to build it for him, and he's going to pay me for it, but I ended up finishing Iron-Blooded Orphans as well, because after 2 Christmas parties, I ended up getting sick. Well, during the first Christmas party, I got sick. And the second Christmas party, which was actual Christmas, it was confirmed that I was sick. And then I missed work on Thursday. So I just spent the entire time just watching Gundam.
What did you think? I actually watched that one, and I think I enjoyed the soap opera nature of it for like 80%. But near the end, I really fell off on giving a shit about it.
I enjoyed it all the way through and really had that philosophical question in my head. What really is the difference between giant robot anime and Gundam?
The problem is that like when you evaluate Gundam 2, it's... I always feel weird saying Gundam and not...
Gundam.
No, but really. The series that come out that are not part of the main line are so different from the original Universal Century Gundam series. I think at some point there is an overlap between like big mecha or mecha anime and Gundam, but honestly, oh God, we've talked about this before, haven't we? Where like Gundam usually has like politics involved in it.
I think we've definitely used an entire intro segment on this before.
Yeah, which is why I bring it up again.
And that's why I like to bring it up. But no, serious, like weird question, because I don't think this was a part of that original conversation we had. Big O, That was very politicking.
We also did bring up Big O.
Fuck.
We are filling out someone's fancy ramen bingo sheet as we speak.
Big O is a lot more like internal politics and less external and warfare, if that makes sense.
Okay, right. I accept that. But no, I really enjoyed Iron Blooded Orphans and thought to myself, okay, I can use more Gundam in my life and a lot less Star Wars in my life. I did end up watching the latest movie.
Oh, I actually have a schedule conflict with the podcast going late, and that is seeing the bad Star Wars with my dad.
Scott, just don't do it.
Don't see it?
Just don't do it.
I think I'm going to buy a ticket for a different movie, though, and then just sneak into that one.
No. No, Scott, it's still not worth it. Even if you were sneaking into the movie theater, just like the time on it.
This is going to be a bonding experience with my dad, who got me into Star Wars when I was a little kid. And I already have been
led you down a horrible path. And
yeah,
you should be
ashamed.
maybe we should hold
off
on...
It's like inheriting an alcoholism gene.
So my only thoughts about the new Star Wars movie that I will say out loud, and this is not going to be spoiler-filled... It's bad, don't see it, and it's not bad for the reasons that you would think
it is.
It's not even popcorn good?
No.
What? Really? Okay. That makes me want to see it more.
I mean, I think everything is popcorn good because popcorn is good.
No, popcorn... All right. That's another conversation.
That's okay. A totally different conversation. But no, so I am not of the ilk of saying a movie is bad, don't see it. Like, have you ever heard me say a movie is bad, don't see it? Usually if I think a movie is bad,
I have never heard you say that.
I just don't want to mention it or talk about it or waste brain cells on it. This one I'm actively telling people, just don't do it.
What are you, a fucking art cop?
Yes.
Once again,
I went to school for 5 years for this. Yes.
This is all just going to pay off later in the episode, I promise. I'm still going to go see it. Sierra gave me the lowdown that I think really like steeled my nerves for this. And that was, I said, how was it? She gave me like 5 modifying/qualifying statements before she gave me a rating. And then she gave me a 6 out of 10. I was like, so it was utter shit. And she's like, I said 6 out of 10. I was like, after you gave it 5 points, like by default.
Man, I wouldn't even give it a 6 out of 10.
Well, she gave it a 6 out of 10 because it got 5 free points. So,
you know, a 6 out of 10 is a 3 out of 5.
I mean, a 6 out of 10 is a 9.2 on IGN. So,
I will say it's terrible. Just don't go see it. I was going to say it's okay until you do anything. And then it just all falls apart. Just don't see it. I hate it.
I think though, Cookie, that this is the era of like hating things is part of our entertainment or catharsis. Like finding something
and dressing it down
is enjoyable to people. And I am in that category, absolutely.
There are movies that are very much, oh, this is so bad, it's good. And I'll even appreciate those for what they are. No. Just don't do it.
This is just bad. Okay.
This one is convinced that it's good, and it's not.
I don't think it was even convinced that it was good.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we can move right along.
Yeah. But yeah, did some Gundam stuff and saw a really bad movie, and, you know, I was going stir crazy at home being sick, so that's why I went to go to the movies. I wish I had stayed home and stayed sick.
It's... You don't understand, but, like, typically... You know what? I probably actually won't go and see it this week. But, like, you're having the exact opposite effect on me. Like, the more people are trashing this movie and saying, like, it's horrible, the more I'm like, it can't be that bad. I should go and watch it and see for myself.
I know, and I just need to start. Just need to stop. So besides that, I've been playing some video games, and I made a decision on what I'm doing next year.
Is that completing video games or deciding that video games don't need to be completed or blazing a third unknown path?
Is that quitting your day job to design video games for a living?
No, it's all of the above.
That creating a meta concept video game that is performed via like radio exchange.
Oh my God. Speaking of that, I don't know what I was watching, but there was something they were like going over really shitty ideas. And one of the ideas was a podcast called Podcast, where they review the previous episodes of the podcast.
I think that there's something truly brilliant in that, but the first episode's going to be very hard to put together.
My eye's fucking twitching.
And I want to do something like this, but for
Neil,
video games.
I was going
to
say, you don't have to be that upset that we missed out on this golden idea. There's still time to take it.
I just want to make a video game called Part 2 that's just a rehash of Part 1, but Part 1's really just a prequel to Part 2. It's so confusing. I love it. But anyway, I decided that next year I'm going to go the maybe Xbox PC route. I've completely given up on PlayStation. And
wait,
I'm okay
why?
With this.
They just released information about the new DualShock setup on the revised DualShock 4 controller.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did.
I couldn't
tell anything significant from the diagram except that maybe it's going to have even better rumble.
It's going to have two analog sticks.
But it's not going to be as good as that HD rumble.
Woot woot. Nah, but I decided I pulled the trigger on just going ahead and getting a gear of Game Pass Ultimate. And I think I'm going to just go the whole Xbox route for... I've made that decision of going Xbox.
Can I remind you of something?
Yeah.
Not long ago, you also committed fully into getting the Founders Edition of Stadia.
Correct. And I noped the fuck out of that situation.
Honestly, I don't even, if we're going to really talk about this for a couple minutes, I don't even have any allegiance going into the next
generation.
The
console wars 2020.
I mean, I have an absolute bias when it comes to this, you know, this current generation. And that's like, there are too many PlayStation exclusive games for me to not like own a PlayStation 4. Whereas Xbox, on the other hand, like there's only a couple games that I've even had an inkling to go and play, and like quite frankly, most of them are now on PC, if not Steam.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I've said this a dozen times, but like, so putting that aside, obviously moving into PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, am I right on that?
I think you are
100%.
Which I'm sure this eventually means that there's going to be a crossover between Tesla and Microsoft Xbox. Just wait for it to happen.
Big box. Yeah.
But it's going to be a fucking, it's going to be a bus. It's going to be a van. The Astro van. Wait, what the hell is he calling the truck?
Oh, Cybertruck.
Cybertruck.
Cybertruck 2077.
The Cyber van is just going to be a fucking Apple Mac Pro shaped van. And it'll also be a console too.
It's gonna be much more angular, though.
The biggest video cards all over the place. Cheese grater surface. You're not even going to have a clear windshield. It's gonna be perforated.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
excited. But yeah, I've decided that go on the Xbox PC route. So technically, that just says I'm not gonna really commit to a console. So I may not even get the Series X.
Mm-hmm.
I get you. So the idea is that if the Series X isn't an improvement over your current PCs, then why even get the console at that point? But you really like the Game Pass and the other like ancillary services that Xbox offers at this point.
Correct.
Like, I can respect that for sure. I mean, I'd be able to play two games that I'm waiting, like that I'm going to end up waiting a year to play now, with the Outer Wilds, or just Outer Wilds and the Outer Worlds.
Oh, because you're not, because you don't like Xbox, so that makes sense.
Or I don't like Epic.
Oh, and that's the only way to get Outer Wilds.
Yeah, and but I think both of those games are available for the Xbox Game Pass on PC if you have that.
I Correct. Believe so. And I know you can just buy the Outer Worlds outright from the Microsoft Store.
But he doesn't want to touch the Microsoft Store, so we don't talk about that anymore.
I don't like the Microsoft Store at
That's
all.
That's right. It killed a computer of yours, if I remember correctly.
It killed a server-like computer of his.
I mean, it's back up and running. I haven't had any problems since adding Xbox, okay? That's all I'm saying. I know Xbox is intrinsically in Windows 10, but I have, like, disabled as much of it as I can, and I have not had a problem since.
I'm happy for you. But yeah, that's the decision for 2020 for me, is going Xbox Game Pass. May end up buying a secondhand Xbox One, so that way the Game Pass can, me and Lizzie can play games at the same time and not have to pay for it twice.
Is there going to be cross-platform between Xbox and PC for the games that you want to play together?
Yes.
Seems so like a decent buy.
I would love to get her into Sea of Thieves. And that does require at least either one more thing of Xbox Game Pass or an Xbox One in the house. So that's that. But besides that, I'm ready to talk about video games, whatever. What you guys been up to this week?
I'm ready to talk about video games, too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, video games, why don't we talk about those?
Okay, so question. Would you guys talk about Katana Zero last week?
We said quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
besides, that game is trippy as fuck.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I think it does a really good job of playing unreliable narrator for you, right? With your perspective as... have you beaten the game, Cookie? I don't want to spoil stuff.
Not quite yet. I went ahead and chose to die first just to kind of see what happens.
Did the same thing and was very disappointed.
Very much so. And then I chose life and things got real, real hectic, real, real mm-hmm. fast. And I'm currently on... I'm like right at the end, I think. I chose life like 4 or 5 missions ago.
That is, yeah, I think you're very close to wrapping up then.
I've already been the dragon.
Have you already played as the dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could sell
good.
A DLC off of that gameplay.
Which hopefully is just what they do, right? Maybe that's the sequel.
Well, they definitely have, I mean, they have to have, if not DLC coming down the line, they have to have Katana 1. Right? We count up, or?
Katana first.
Yeah.
If you want to go the Bravely Default.
Yeah, Katana first, Katana second.
Yeah, I have to remind myself not to say anything that could give away spoilers here.
All I can say is I love the... Like you said, your unreliable narrator, and I love the interaction they have with other people on the drug, and
how they interrupt your own playback, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just killed you, and yet you're still alive, and are you just killed me, and I'm still alive, and we're both like, wait a second.
It's sort of the stalemate thing. They're just like, I'm going to keep fucking killing you and you can't kill me. And then you kill them. And they're like, well, you can't kill me all the way. And then you kill them all the way. And they're like, well, shit, man, I didn't think you would be this determined. Once again, proving that like these really cool like indie games focus on a single element, and that is determination.
It's the anime.
Yeah, don't go Undertale on us again.
Yeah.
No, that whole cutscene with the main character in tied up in the chair. Mm-hmm. That whole sequence is actually a lot of fun.
Agreed.
Very much so, because it's like...
The reverse interrogation is... I was not expecting to get that out of this game at all.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the scene I was talking about. And then you got the one boss, and you're like... It's like, okay, I'll take care of him. And then you kind of hit a button, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm struggling. Oh, crap, I'm dead. Well, I'm back alive again. Okay, I can struggle more. And then it's like, oh, that guy went down in one swing. Fuck. That was anticlimactic. And he's like, ha, you should have been dead. It's like, dude, I'm on the sauce. Let's go.
Yeah, honestly, the boss fights are the most interesting or satisfying combat for the game, for sure. It reminds me, a lot of those fights remind me of almost playing like bullet hell games where you just don't have a health bar. Like when you watch people play them perfectly, I feel like those boss fights really make you feel like I must master this boss before I can move on, or I must get incredibly lucky. Both outcomes happened for me while I played the game. There was maybe one or two bosses where I was just like, oh, they happened to move into a bad spot so I could swing on them a couple times. And other times it felt like I need to understand exactly what this boss's like next three attacks will be and read them when they give me the tell to finish this fight.
There's only like one, looking back on the whole experience now, there's only one thing that I could really add to my previous comments and remarks. And it's a criticism towards like the game really not necessarily giving you a pattern of growth or like a power creep, if you will. Like kind of wish there are multiple points in the game where I found myself thinking what would have been really cool was a way to do mid-air dashes or rolls, quote unquote, not actually rolls, but like sort of
invulnerability dash. Yeah. A quick iframe or two. I actually expected it to go the opposite route as well, though, right? Like, we can say that your power is the same the whole game, except when you play as blonde swordsman, maybe the dragon. I actually expected, like, with the loss of Kronos, perhaps, or it becoming rarer or a scarcity, them slowly taking away your ability to rely on stopping time, or slowing it, I should say.
Or punishing you for dying and making the death scene just take longer and longer, since that's what Kronos is. It's just a, once you go through withdrawal,
yeah,
you just experience death for eternity.
Yeah, I think there are some mechanical things they could have played with that, for sure.
I think ultimately, though, like the game's scope was just not there, you know? Like the game is actually relatively short and small, and there's really not... I mean, I can't speak any further without like yielding details of the game that Cookie may or may not be aware of. So I'll just stop there.
You can spoil as much as you want on it now. I've experienced enough of it to be like,
well, I mean,
I'm going to finish it no matter what, possibly.
I can say one thing, and that's that like there doesn't really seem to actually be that much variance in the storytelling outside of the I killed myself and it's game over early. Or I decided to live. Like outside of that very specific moment, I don't think there really is that much variance to the script.
And I think Neil and I went over how much we deviated, but still came to the same outcome or conclusion.
Hmm. And I'll have to give the episode a listen to like hear exactly how you guys go. I don't want you to rehash the entire conversation. Mm-hmm. But if you would, cliff notes.
Ultimately, it's that lack of deviance, that lack of variance in the script and game that I think further gives me the impression that the game wasn't necessarily like of the scope that we could expect greater features and mechanics to be added into it. Like it ultimately is a pretty small game.
It ultimately is a single player game for not... experiencing different things and having 17 hours of gameplay.
Right.
Which is totally fine.
And yet I find that it does things better than a game designed to be entirely narratively driven, despite having a much smaller script Before I like complete this segue, are you done with Katana Zero for now in terms of talking points?
Yeah.
So a lot of Katana Zero relies upon the idea of, you know, being kind of unsure of how real the events around you and, you know, your surroundings are. Like, as you guys noted, you're playing with as an unreliable narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're really effective in making you question the very fabric and nature of the world. And honestly, I think that's something that Disco Elysium, a game that Scott and I have both been playing, wants to do, but at times kind of falls short of. Now, I feel like I'm addressing you specifically, Cookie, because you're the one out of the three of us who hasn't played it. But I'm sure you've probably seen bits and pieces of Disco Elysium since it won a handful of awards at the Game Awards show. I mean, what's that? I don't know. The best way I can describe Disco Elysium, though, is that it's basically Fallout or Planescape Torment. And when I say Fallout, I mean Fallout 1 and 2, like that sort of isometric view. Except you really don't have a combat system, at least as far as I've been able to tell so far, and I'm maybe like 6 hours into the game. And like the most menacing threats that you come across are like seem to be kind of everyday occurrences and trivial occurrences, at least again so far. I'm sure you can get yourself into deeper shit, but within the first 15 minutes of playing the game on my first run through, I actually killed myself, or not really killed myself. I got my character killed by reaching for a tie. Like, so when I say it's very similar to Fallout and Planescape Torment in that, like, without the combat, so to speak, Disco Elysium is all about having like a character with specific stats that we can get into in a bit here. But like having your character interact within the world that they exist and trying to reach multiple different objectives, but one primary objective. And so everything is driven through dialogue trees, and there's a little bit of like using items here to solve very minor puzzles, but even the puzzles don't necessarily seem all that specific. And the puzzles themselves, or you know, that crazy or in depth either. The puzzles also seem to be fueled off of like dialogue trees as a way to interact with them. Like you might have something as simple as I need to get a crowbar. I need something to open up this box with, and I don't have anything. So I need to go and find a crowbar or something that I can open it up with, or maybe I can find a key for it. Mm-hmm. Like that's the extent of the puzzle so far. And a lot of Disco Elysium, I think, is about it. It's weird because I don't necessarily think it's a mystery story or a murder story within the traditional sense. And I don't know how far you've gotten, Scott, but go ahead.
It's not that at all, Neil. It's a journey of self-discovery, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's you are the biggest mystery is actually your character and your past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be said without a spoiler tag that the game begins with you a drunk
person.
Yeah.
an unmolded lump of flesh.
And you awake, or potentially not, maybe. You basically start the game with a black screen and dialogue being read to you that essentially is describing the vast emptiness or void of what I'm guessing is either death or unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. And you have to navigate through this dialogue tree with, you know, essentially nothingness in order to wake yourself up from your drunk slumber.
Mm-hmm.
And upon waking up, you are delighted to find that you have absolutely no knowledge of who you were, what you did, any of that.
Nothing. I mean, you know literally jack shit. You know enough to dress yourself, and that's about the extent of the tools you start the game with, is you can speak the language and you can put on and take off clothes. And everything else from there is, you know, like learning to take the training wheels off.
Even down to the point that your character's portrait, which is shown in the lower left, is obscured until you actually find a reflection and can put essentially a face to yourself.
Very French impressionist style. And your self-perspective even changes that image over time. So depending on how you develop your feelings about yourself or how you mirror yourself off of other people can change your portrait.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I know. I know of the single portrait change, which is it too much of a spoiler to talk about the expression?
The expression? No, the expression is I think it's something that you access pretty early on in the game once you're able to see your reflection.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think we can give some minor spoilers away, and
this is a game that is so rich in just like what you don't know, because you are starting at like zero. You're starting at a blank slate. That minor spoiler here and there still leaves, you know, 98-99% of the game to discover, to surprise, or like shock you. So I feel okay with going into like one or two specific topics, especially if they don't relate directly to the case.
Well, I mean, and that's the very nature of it. The case, I mean, unless there's a twist or something that neither of us are aware of, you are a police detective and you've basically been sent in to investigate a case, which apparently you spent your first 3 days of the job getting shit-faced and taking lots of drugs, which is possibly why you don't have a memory.
And majorly fucking up around the city.
Yeah. When you look in the mirror, you find yourself with like this kind of ridiculously over-the-top smile. Like this jackass shit-eating grin. And you cannot change your expression for like the first portion of the game.
You're stuck in this permanent gestures grimace until you find a way to resolve it with like sheer force of will or introspection or like deviation from the like character type or personality that it's trying to sculpt upon your face.
I'm very curious if there are multiple ways to get rid of the expression.
I believe so. Or I believe that to remove the expression, what's really cool about this that I enjoy is similar to a lot of other like role-playing games that are really focused on overcoming like checks, difficulty checks in this case, is that when you do things that would feasibly or reasonably improve or worsen situations, then you have modifiers to your check. So I think one argument that can be made for like changing the expression you can go about multiple routes might be that you have to use the same skill to check to modify it for a variety of or I think for every type of player you might have to use the same skill to change it. But you can go about applying positive or negative modifiers to that in a variety of different ways. And so depending on your character type, maybe if you're really shit at that particular check, like if that skill is very weak, there might be a strength of yours that you have that is like tangentially or maybe not even like logically related whatsoever that can have a huge impact on giving you a bonus to the check of like maybe +4 or +5 to the roll. Which is huge because this works on like essentially a 2-die rolling system where checks move from like, I think easy is the lowest all the way up to maybe like heroic or godly. I think godly is the highest and that's like a 20 on your check or something.
Or I think it maxes out at 12, right? So it's 2 6-sided die. So if a challenge is... Oh, wait, no, because you're...
2 sixes is an instant success. Snake eyes is an automatic failure. It's sort of like a crit success, crit failure system that some people homebrew in D&D.
What is this dice system you guys are talking about all of a sudden?
It's the game actually rolls 2 6-sided dice, or it runs its RNG and shows you like the result of the dice rolls. And those get added to your skills... whenever you do a skill check. So your skills are like modifiers. This is actually very similar to D&D in the fact that, like, if I'm good at drama and I have a score of 8 in drama, whatever I roll gets 8 added to it. And so if I have to pass an easy drama check, that means I just have to roll something that's not snake eyes to pass the DC of 10.
And as Scott alluded to, just to like drive home the point more, you can do things to add, like, you could kind of think of it as temporary or situational bonuses to your stats, or more specifically the situation at hand. Like, if you find a pickle jar and your task is to open the pickle jar, but your strength is very low, you might be able to look at the pickle jar and realize, if I hold the label, I'm going to have better grip, and that will increase your likelihood of opening up the pickle jar.
You could also wear gloves that would give you a slightly better grip.
Yes, exactly. You can wear all sorts of different outfits. Maybe wearing some glasses or a visor may actually end up helping you with the pickle jar identify a good grip point, too. There's all sorts of different things.
You can change your conceptualization about the pickle jar and think, this pickle jar is weak as shit, and I am more powerful than it, and have a psychological advantage over the pickle jar opening. Like, the variety of ways in which your skills, of which there are many, I think 5 per category.
Yeah, there's like 20 skills. Maybe 6 per category, actually.
Yeah, it might be 6 per category. And investing in them is actually a very slow and arduous process. So you end up creating a very unique and, I think, like, individually influenced or sculpted character. Like, I think I'm playing in a way that I have a basic idea of the character that I want to roleplay as. And that deviates kind of towards my personal preferences or how I interact with the world if it were me in some ways. But as I progress through this game, I am very excited to play like meathead rock star stupid cop who is just going to kick through every door that my weak like art cop cannot even begin to like approach.
And you're touching upon it. Essentially, the way before you even start the game, you essentially pick out a way to distribute points into 5 different stats. And those stats...
Four
different. Sorry, thank you. Those stats directly affect your skills. So, like, the 5 or 6 skills that are in each stat are essentially governed by them. That essentially affects, like, how good you are at those to begin with before you start the game. And when you've started the game and gained levels through investigating and completing tasks, you can then start to specialize more so in each of those skills. But like when you start the game, you have 3 options to choose from. I fucking hate default options usually. So I always go for the custom one and I sculpt my character from there. It's really interesting because like, the stats are not singular dimensional. I wish I'd remembered exactly what the stats were called. But there's essentially one for intellect, and that might actually be exactly what it is. And I think it's like psyche.
Intellect, psyche, like physicality, and then I forget the
motor
last one.
Or something.
But yeah, motor. It is motor. Yeah.
It's like motorix or something like that,
yeah,
but it's basically
motorix,
a lot
it's
of
dexterity.
Yeah. But the idea is that, like, aside from intellect actually seems to be pretty just net in one direction. Each of those has like a duality to it. No? Okay.
I would totally argue that intellect has a very interesting, like, I think there are 2 ways you can really play or push intellect.
Well, so hold up. Is Inland Empire an intellect?
No, Inland Empire is in...
That's in Psyche.
Psyche.
Okay.
Which is the coolest fucking skill.
So, you'll have to tell me what intellect is, but let me explain Psyche real quick, because that's a good one to talk about the duality of these stats.
Okay.
So, Psyche is a stat that the more you raise it generally, you're going to be more personable and more charismatic. But at the same time, as you raise your psyche, you're also going to be more unstable in certain ways. Which we'll probably talk about the different individual skills and exactly how they can influence your character. Physicality, or whatever that stat is called, makes you more able to do, you know, physical things. Like you can kick through doors and shit. But
or drugs.
Also, Yeah, exactly. Also, raising your physicality means that your character is going to also have more innate knowledge or potentially experience of these hard narcotics and drugs.
It's a great alcoholic stat.
Exactly. And then I don't remember what the dual nature of motorix or whatever the motor skills one is, but
I'm not sure I can come up with that either. Like, there's perception and hand-eye coordination and interfacing, and like all of those actually make sense as like pretty overlapping or like, oh, go ahead.
Reaction speed. And reaction speed, when you have reaction speed checks succeed,
mm-hmm.
You tend to at times get the wrong impression of things.
Mm.
So
I have terrible reaction speed, actually, so I haven't suffered that very much.
So what I've done with my character build is I've tried to make myself as like very knowledgeable, or no, excuse me, like it's like a focus in, I'm trying to remember here. It's a focus in knowledge, but I have my like quote unquote key characteristic in psyche,
mm-hmm.
and then I have sacrificed all of the physicality of my character for the rest to put into motorix. So like that's why my guy had a heart attack immediately, because he has like no
endurance.
Health basically. Yeah.
I too died from a heart attack reaching for my tie. This is the first game to kill me doing a basic activity, and I thought, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, I'm really fucked up.
Wait, the long dark didn't kill you doing a basic activity?
Yes.
I mean, I froze to death in that. This one was like, my heart gave out reaching my hand above my head.
I've actually died from two heart attacks now.
I've only died from one heart attack, but that's because I found that a rain jacket keeps me alive better.
Ooh, yeah. The other thing that makes I'm gonna preface this statement by first saying that, like, honestly, a lot of the story and dialogue in the game is really not extraordinary in my opinion. Like, you talking to other people and the other people talking to you is pretty pedestrian at times. And like, honestly, as I alluded to before, like, because of the very simplistic nature of this game and the narrative, it really doesn't do a great job, in my opinion, of offering you these super trippy moments. Because like Katana Zero is a perfect example of using the game's like delivery or medium as a means to give you like this extraordinary experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, Disco Elysium, I'm 3 days in now, if that's any reference to you, Scott, doesn't quite do that. But I'm also not trying to take a lot of hard drugs, so there's that possibility too.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I assume that withdrawal would do something to fuck my character up to any extent, but I haven't really witnessed any of that yet. Not to say that it won't happen.
Okay, I was going to say there are definitely consequences from withdrawal.
But so far, like, I'm kind of underwhelmed about a lot of the writing. The voice acting is absolutely garbage at times. Like, this is an indie game. Like, I kind of forget as I'm playing until I hit some of those voice dialogue parts that, like, oh yeah, someone probably got paid $10 an hour to do this line, because it's
some people didn't get bad. Paid at all. There's multiple people from the podcast Chapo Trap House who did it just as like, hey, you're making
for free.
They're like, hey, you're making an indie game. It's going to talk about socialism a little bit. We'll just voice these character lines.
Yeah, it's super bad so far into it. And again, like, I understand the scope of this game and it's an indie game. So like, this is not a game breaker at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where like a character from one dialogue line to another, you can tell that they changed the room that they were recording in. It's that bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, that's, and being a sound engineer and being someone that has done voiceover before, not me voicing, but recording voiceover, like, it is so glaringly obvious that, like, that is maybe the lowest production value in the entire game.
And this
that's
is
a good
why
thing
you're,
because
this is why oh, your sorry? Capo type is art cop, isn't it?
It's actually not.
Oh, I am an art cop. But I just want to note very quickly that we've had the discussion about bad audio being very punishing on the ears at time, especially for audio engineer
yeah.
Neil. we did still love Persona.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Even though, like, there's some pretty shit audio in there.
Yeah.
And I also think most of the Persona actors and actresses or voice actors are all, like, actually pretty reasonably good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sometimes the quality, the format was not very good there. Anyways, Disco Elysium. There are some good voice actors. I personally think that your partner is actually perfectly fine.
Yeah, Kim Kitsuragi.
The quality of the VO itself, or like the recording, is maybe not so great. And I wish that there were times where like maybe someone could have gone in and cleaned things up, because holy crap. But putting that, again, putting all of that aside, and putting aside the fact that I feel like so far the script, not the narrative, but the script itself, the writing is actually kind of eh. The saving grace of the game is that, or of the story so far to me, is that these skills that you are investing points in are not just skills. They are kind of like your personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Your character is constantly having inner discussions with the different skills that he has inside of him. Like the one that I invested as my signature is volition, which I think the easiest way to describe it is basically like
motivation.
The ideal of being good.
Mm-hmm.
Volition.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've just encountered it where it seems like I can't do something if I don't have the motivation to do something if I don't have a high enough volition. And my volition is honestly trash. So it's like, I looked at a filing cabinet and I was like, look, I can't sort through that. That looks boring as shit. And so I still have been unable to look through said filing cabinet.
The other thing that we didn't really touch upon too much was actually describing that there are a lot of checks happening in the background that do not have dice rolls. And whenever a check succeeds,
you get,
and maybe if
out.
It fails, yeah, you get additional information, but that information is always displayed as essentially dialogue of that part of your personality talking to you. So oftentimes, because my volition has been something I've invested a lot of time in, as well as like drama and a few other things.
Drama is the best, because your drama personality does refer to you as sire or my liege whenever they're explaining something. It doesn't appear to be lying, my liege. You're like, thank you, drama.
And it's so cool because like you can have these conversations or like you can be interrogating or questioning someone and your personalities start talking back to each other because they disagree with each other.
They'll war over what direction to take, like an interrogation in, for instance. Like I've had an opportunity to say arrest someone, and I have two personalities that are duking it out, like this is the reason why you need to arrest them, and another personality saying that is a terrible idea, you're going to jeopardize these things if you do this, and they leave you essentially they leave you to adjudicate or like make judgment on the right course of action. And of course, like any good game that's trying to strike this balance, there is never a right course of action. There is just the one that you are most convinced by.
There is a very specific moment. Like, and I was kind of like hot and cold on this for a while, because like some of the dialogue seems like it's just a waste of time between your personalities too. But there is one moment. Scott, have you been on the roof of the hostel yet?
I have.
So,
yes, I
don't
did
think you got
break
this.
My toes trying to kick through the door.
I didn't even try because I knew like my stats so bad.
It's a 3% chance for me. It also, I should tell you for the rolls cookie that they do give you a percentage chance that it will work out for you. So you
oh,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, like,
oh, nice.
And it will tell you too, like at the percentage of 45%, it still says is like an even chance, for instance. A very low is when you're like 3% or 9%. But you always have the opportunity to get a critical success or failure. So sometimes on a check, it's worth it at 3% if you've invested nothing to just give it a shot and see if you're going to roll two sixes, because you could just get really lucky. And if you fail on a white check is what they call it, which you just get, you get an indicator on the check before you roll it. You get a little heads up display on the odds, and then it'll tell you if it's a white check or a red check. White checks can be repeated once you've improved the skill in one way or another. Like, once you've had a stat impact upon it that raises it in any way, you can reattempt the check. There are even some special circumstances where you just get checks reset for you because you've conceptualized an idea, for instance, which that's something we need to talk about in a second, is idea conceptualization.
Mm, yeah.
Because it's just as important as investing like personal skills. And it's a little more complex and it's a little bit more of a gamble. But white checks you can redo. Red checks are a one-time shot. It's like maybe a suspect is running away from you and you have one chance to try and stop them. And maybe that check is to use your like your reaction speed or your motorics to like kneecap them with your gun or something. There's no combat in this. Like if there is an altercation, you're rolling a check to see, do you succeed or do you fail? Well, it's a red check. So if you fail, maybe you shoot and you miss. That's it. That was your one chance. You have lost that opportunity. Otherwise, you can succeed, but there's no going back to it. You won't be in that position or situation again. And it's not always in a physical way either. Sometimes it's convincing someone and you essentially have to go all in on a lie or a particular like line of questioning. And so you may be able to see a red check and back away from it, but oftentimes they're in your face and it's asking you like, do you want to take this chance? It's now or never, and it's going to permanently change like the outcome of what's going to happen here.
So on the rooftop, you are interviewing a person, and after you finish the interview, this person seems to be very upfront and like, you know, is very direct with you and so forth, not concealing things or not like lying to you. And all of your personality sides have all been chiming in and saying like, yeah, seems believable. This person seems believable.
Except
like not lying. Nothing's going on here. And oh, so maybe you got the same check I did.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the interview, you get a check. I think it's for volition, but I could be wrong.
There's a drama check.
Oh, is there? And well, so I complete the volition check,
mm-hmm.
and my volition kicks into my character, and he's like, hey, listen up. Everyone you've been talking to so far, like all of these different sides of your personality or whatever, they're all compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't believe anything they're saying, except Encyclopedia over there. He's
not
fine.
Interested. Yeah. And like, Encyclopedia does not have an opinion. Encyclopedia just throws shit at you. And whenever you want something important from Encyclopedia, he's like, look, I can't help you with that. Why would I remember my mother's name? And then it's like, but I can tell you about this type of car.
Yep. So when Volition or whatever it might have been for you, Scott, like tells you that these guys are all compromised, especially that guy. Like, I started to go through the chat log or the history log of the...
And see their bias?
Yeah, and started to see, like, oh, wow, okay. Like, I knew that there were going to be differing opinions, but I mm-hmm. always assumed that those different personalities were going to say the correct thing, if you will.
But
and, like,
yeah.
maybe when there is deviance, that, like, it would be a matter of preference over, like, maybe I should...
Or perspective.
Support... Yeah, exactly. Difference in perspective. That maybe I should support like the less crazy Inland Empire, or like not Inland Empire, which is super crazy.
I was gonna say,
and go with logic yeah. there. But like even logic, the one that I kind of viewed as being like the basis for like a very milquetoast approach was compromised. So the game was basically telling me I could no longer trust those things.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, or at least in that particular situation. And I think that was like one of the defining points for me in the game, where I was just like, okay, I think I'm in now. Like, these are characters just as much as your character is, or any of the people you meet.
Mm-hmm.
All of these different, like, you're essentially dealing with like a kind of under control disassociative personality issue or disorder. I mean,
I think it's fair to say that at that moment you realize that the only person you can trust is the most reticent with communication or information, and that is your partner, Kim Kitsuragi, who like intentionally is always honest with you, but intentionally is almost always withholding, like analyzing and assessing things. And so if you become close with him, because you can absolutely destabilize the relationship, or you can make him like come to like you. There are lots of ways to do that. Like
Ace is high, Ace is low. Yeah.
Or maybe sing a karaoke song in tribute to him.
Wait, does that piss him off?
No, he if he was capable of blushing, he would have blushed. I know it. but like that's actually your most reliable narrator or character, but even he is like someone that you have to really like coax and milk information out of, and I think realizing that makes it such a big turning point for the game. I didn't have that volition check, but I did experience something very similar with a drama check that's just like, I don't know about all of this stuff, but it would be much more dramatic if she just happened to be lying. And so I was like, okay, well, let's check this out. And of course, drama was like, I think we're on to something, don't you? so sometimes like, that's what's really cool about the personalities too, right? Like yours makes a logical reason why to follow an alternate path, right? Or why to take a turn in what you think is the correct course or the like correct decision making. Meanwhile, mine's almost like I'm trying to think. It's not capricious. Maybe there is some capriciousness to it, but it's just like let's indulge ourselves for a moment and just fuck around because it seems interesting. And I indulged myself and I fucked around, and it was very helpful for my case. Like there's the fact that you can play so many different types of detective in this, or just people. Honestly, there are many ways in which you can just from the start of the game be like, you know what? Being a policeman sounds like it fucking sucks. So I'm not a cop. I'm going to go out and party. And then when people speak to you, you know, they all know you're an officer. You've been around. You've established somewhat of a like personality or relationship with the space at that point in time. But you can just keep denying it. Like, I'm not a cop. Do I look like a cop? I'm a fucked up hippie. Definitely not a cop. And so
I'm a disco like, yeah, or what? I'm a disco holdover.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a communist. I'm not a cop. Like, you can take so many different directions with it. This game is, yeah, absolutely built about creating a character, and I think way less about the investigation. The investigation is the motivator towards you creating and further developing a character and questioning your own ideas and beliefs and like experimenting and exploring the things that interest you. Much to your lieutenant's like disdain as we decide to go like grasshopper hunting instead of work on the murder case.
It's I want to piggyback off of Kitsuragi for just a second.
Okay.
So like you're right. It seems like Kim is maybe like your best ally so far, but
it doesn't mean that on my next playthrough, I'm not going to play like super shitty, druggy, physical cop. But it does mean that this time I am loyal to Kim. He is my best friend.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, that's even a choice to determine how good of an ally he is. And he's been like pretty reliable for me so far. But that doesn't mean I told him anything. Like, so he found out about, you know, the situation that the protagonist was in or is in regarding missing items as they became prevalent or known.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait, you don't have that? Like, you could have told him that
right
immediately after you saw him, basically. Like, I'm trying to play like a very like good quote unquote character. I'm essentially trying to play a character whose personality has been like shocked to reset.
Mm-hmm.
By the nature of like, I'd rather be a good person than like someone that's like completely fucked up and doing bad things.
Well, maybe only in video games, but that's still good.
but so it's interesting to me because I am able to like play in this like sort of neutral gray zone where like I'm not going to incriminate myself by like doing the proper thing of like reporting my missing possessions to the police station. Like, that sounds like I'm just going to be fucking myself over.
Yeah, it sounds like everybody at your station is just going to laugh at you and talk about how you're such a fucking worthless idiot, which I wouldn't know anything about.
I called them for money, and that's when they proceeded to do that. So I was like, fuck you guys, I'm not calling for anything else.
Okay, yeah. I may have taken a different route and gotten the same result with more shame.
I have like a feeling that there is not necessarily as much variance to the story and to like the events that happen. But like you said, it's more about playing your character and getting the joy out of like accomplishing the same thing in different routes or different solutions. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure there's more than one way to get to the back of this building, but my character, who's kind of like, he tries to do good, but he's also very self-righteous in like a superstar sort of way, you can say. Mm-hmm. Like, does he care about someone telling him not to pull the curtains down?
No,
like, no,
he's
going to
open the curtains.
Like, you telling me not to pull the curtains makes me want to pull the curtains more.
Meanwhile, I'm a paranormal investigator. Maybe we can work out a deal.
Paranormal investigator cop. You can solve
ghost cop
curses.
On the scene well before I became art cop and started my graffiti career.
Oh, I got shut down for that.
Ah, well, you're not as artistic as I am. Apparently you don't see not. How shit the world is.
I'm a superstar communist cop right now.
Holy shit.
The communist thing just kind of happens. Wait, no. I might have actually declined that, but I think...
Hey, man, communism just sneaks right up on you. So does the free market, it turns out.
I don't recall what it is. I might be a moralist super cop, which doesn't make sense.
No, it can work.
Superstar cop, I mean, not super cop.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe that's what's cool too, is like the things that develop your character is not just their basic personality, but like you are forced, or at least you are very much pressured, not necessarily forced. There's almost always an opportunity to like cop out, but you're definitely pressured at multiple points to like make a stand about your ideology, whether it's confronting like racism that exists in the space or even political ideologies ranging from the free market to sort of an interventionist sort of like Alex Jones representation of globalism to being like just pro like pro person, like individualistic and ethical. I think you could define that as maybe like political humanism, all the way to like the invisible hand of the market. You can deviate down so many different paths, and it doesn't seem to define your other personality traits necessarily. Like, you can be a very quiet intellectual communist, or you can just be like, we should all be equal and I will punch anyone who doesn't think that type of communist.
You can be a walking contradiction.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the game will actually, like, I think at times finds pressure points of where those contradictions are, and you're confronted by them either internally or by other characters who are just as perceptive or maybe more intelligent than you are in that space. It's a wild game. It's very thoughtful. There's no, like, it's pointing and clicking and reading. The like spaghetti network that you develop to try and unravel this case more and more. And it truly is all about just like untying any knot that is possible for you to untie and then seeing where that leads to. Like, your skills and whatnot are just giving you different breadcrumbs to pick up. And ultimately, they're most likely going to converge. Like, I think that's the only rational way that you solve this, is like, no matter what way you take, there may be this like huge branching network. Your breadcrumbs are going to start to overlap in some fashion or another, and you're going to find your way to the center of the maze.
Yeah.
It's great.
I have a feeling that like this might... I don't know. I think I'm getting a lot of enjoyment out of it, but I might be in it for the wrong reason, which is like solving the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really curious how I'm going to appreciate the game after everything has been solved.
It feels like the stakes are so... I think the game is like trying to... Because you're 3 days in, I do believe that the game is trying to communicate that the mystery is somewhat... just a part of the whole, or it's like symbolic, like so much rides on the resolution of the mystery, but not just you solving it because it's the thing that you're tasked to do, but more because like how you approach and ultimately solve the mystery is going to impact the world around you in like a very physical and maybe metaphysical way. We didn't talk about conceptualization, have we? Real quick aside for conceptualization, this is one of the only games I've ever played in which you can't just, you don't just use skill points to invest in your character's abilities. You can use skill points to ruminate on thoughts or ideas. And that rumination comes with bonuses or penalties. And then the completion of those ruminations come with other bonuses or penalties or weird, like, exceptions to the mechanics in the games. And you can fill up on ideas and how they like flesh out your characters. They just kind of this, they create this network of overlaps. And it is, it's so, I think, integral to the game that they even have the option to spend skill points, not to invest in your character, which we could agree is like a net positive outcome, and not to invest in just conceptualizing ideas or like unlocking space to do so in your thought cabinet, as they call it. But you can actually use skill points to remove concepts and ideas. Maybe you ruminated on a thought or an idea that gave you a bonus or like drew your personality or your character in a direction that you don't actually like or think is like beneficial to how you're playing. You actually have to spend hard-earned skill points, which don't, it takes time or a lot of luck to really like improve your skills in short order. Like it takes quite a bit of progress to get one skill point after another. And because of that, like you can spend these hard-earned skill points to lose concepts, but it feels wasteful to me right now, perhaps, is how I'd describe it. Like instead of investing in the skills that I have, which I feel like I'm weak in many categories and strong in like only two or three, spending skill points on losing ideas is really, it's an interesting thing that I haven't been tempted to do yet, but I feel like that would also drastically change my character in the final outcome of how they operate. Like maybe when I fill up the skill points and min-max in a way that I find appropriate, I start spending it on sorting out ideas.
Wait, what's the conceptualization called?
There are so many. There's also like 40 conceptualizations or something. I feel like you can only unlock a small fraction of them.
You find a bunch of weird ones just randomly too, like... I don't remember what it was, but I did something that possessed my character to do like air guns, like finger guns.
So then you know, it's funny. I have two different D&D parties that idea came up around the same time, completely independent of one another.
I don't remember what it does. I think it gives you like suggestion bonuses if your hands are free. So like if you're not holding anything when you're in conversations, you essentially get to talk to people better because you can do your finger guns. It's such a stupid conceptualization. But I mean, I guess that's the idea of it, that like these ideals can spring up out of nowhere. And it can be very simple things that spur up these thoughts that you have to invest time into.
What they impact is unexpected sometimes. I got like a industrial shit compactor conceptualization that is the only thing that allowed my incredibly weak-willed and like weak constitution character to deal with a dead body. Like it gave me like a +6 or something to my skill check, which I otherwise would have had like maybe a 17% on getting correct.
I just realized it's 1:41, so I think it's about time to wrap it.
Yeah, I will need to bounce soon. I messed up again on the timing. I've had a shit time with like dealing with Central and Mountain for some reason recently.
Just do everything Mountain time and you'll be fine.
Yeah. I've been trying too hard to make it Central. I'm slowly drifting away from that world.
You could just have two clocks in front of you, like they do in all the TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
New York time, Hong Kong.
We should all just run on New York time. Let's just do that instead. No, what time is it there?
What we should run off
242.
We should run off on beats. Do you know what beats are?
Root vegetable?
Yeah, or like something that your heart or a drum does. Or Dre.
It's, I have to look up exactly what it is. It's Swatch Internet Time or Beat Time. The idea is basically that you have 1,000 beats in a day and that this time doesn't change no matter where you are. And I think the idea was that it would be, I could be absolutely wrong, but I believe it was picked up or developed as a way for us to use time in like the foreseeable future, like when we're in space and shit too. But so like no matter where you are, whether you're in space, whether you're in Hong Kong, Greenland's, wherever, you go by the 1,000 beat system where 1 second is 0.011574 beats, 1 minute is 0.694 beats, and 1 hour is 41.6 beats. We just changed to the 1,000 beats per day plan. And so like maybe us in America would wake up around 400 beats and then we'd go to bed around, you know, 800 beats or something like that, 900 beats.
We just need a tool that would do that because I can't do that math in my head if every hour is 41.6 beats.
Yeah, no, I mean, the idea is basically that like this would be a very long time before we could ever have the entire human race jump onto like a different time system. Neither here nor there. The reason why I knew about this is because Phantasy Star Online went on went off of the beat system years back in the Dreamcast. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions on how to get your beat counter working at home, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Or if you want to find out what other types of beat cop you can be, please don't hesitate to tell your friends to listen to Fancy Ramen, the podcast.
And once you've done that, if you want to entertain yourself some more, we do have streaming on Twitch. You can find Neil at twitch.tv/fancyramentv and Cookie at /CookieSkimilk. That's CUKISKMILK. And Jay Frey all day, our friend John as well.